Hey guys, it's Ryan Goldstein on the Cornell men's lacrosse team. This is the DeFly and Dixie podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back to the DeFly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old Hopkins friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, another great show this week, including a preview of the biggest games. And as you heard on the intro, we're joined by Cornell sophomore attackman Ryan Goldstein, as he and the Big Red prepare for their top 10 matchup with Ivy League foe Harvard this Saturday. Lots to get to. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dix, one of the best things about doing this podcast, besides the quality time I get to spend with you each week, is that on like Friday mornings, Friday afternoons, when people reach out to us, I know you get that. And one person who always, I know, listens to this podcast basically every Friday as they're heading on the road to go watch their son play is my sister, Tracy John Ficarro. And today, Friday, April 18th, is her birthday. So happy birthday to my big sis, Tracy. I know you're listening to this, and I plan on seeing you later today and having dinner with you. So celebrating your birthday and you on this special occasion.
Happy birthday, Tracy. I'll give you a shout out from the blimp known as the Tizer Tower Press Box broadcast area from the University of Maryland.
Yeah,
doing so you the Maryland Hopkins game, you know, tonight with Don Zimmerman, and I'll be doing the play-by-play. Believe it or not, I'm play-by-play, and Zim is on is the analyst.
Where's Joe B?
Joe's and he's been pretty public about it on his social media. I think Joe's having some voice issues, so he's had to take some time off from both CAPS as well as Big Ten men's lacrosse. So hopefully Joe will be back soon at full strength.
He'll be missed, but you know, Coach Zim is expert on the game of lacrosse. He certainly knows this rivalry, the Hopkins Maryland rivalry, as well as anybody. And you're great on play by play. Your versatility there, Dix. You just slide right into the other chair. It's not that easy though. I understand. Like you, that's like a whole way you look at the game and talk about it is differently. But I think you guys will be fine, and I look forward to watching that after dinner with my sister. I'll catch that game.
Well, I'll be seeing your sister and the rest of the North Carolina Tar Heels on Saturday on the 19th as they take on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So it is a dizzying weekend of activity for the Dixon family, but looking forward to it. I'm sure we'll be talking about that game later in the show.
Yeah, we will be. That's a top 10 matchup that's certainly on our schedule to talk about. But you also did a game on Wednesday night?
Hopkins, Penn State women. Yeah, it was a play-by-play with Rachel DeCheco.
Man, you're getting around, man. It's lacrosse.
It's that time of year, buddy. It's that time of year.
It is that time of year, Dixie. And it's all leading up to the NCAA championships. And if you want to go to the championships this year, we have a deal for our listeners. As the NCAA championship weekend heads back to Gillette Stadium from May 23rd to 26th, there's no place else in the world for lacrosse fans to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season, men's and women's. Action starts on Friday with the women's D1 semifinals, continues on Saturday with the men's D1 semis, and then on Championship Sunday, you'll get men's D2, men's D3, and women's D1, culminating Monday afternoon with the men's D1 final. And Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options for both the men and women by using the code ILPOD at checkout. So go to the website, ncaa.com/laxtickets, and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You're going to be there, save some money, show your support for our DeFly and Dixie podcast, and get $5 off your tickets. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets, promo code ILPOD, ILPOD, at checkout, and save $5 off your tickets. We'll see you in Foxborough. All right, Dixie, You said there's eight games to preview this week, including six top 20 matchups,
Eight?
eight, two top
God.
10 games, and the best rivalry in the sport. So let's start with number 18, Rutgers. Take on number eight, Penn State in State College at 6 p.m. This game will be the first of a doubleheader on the Big Ten Network. They'll be playing for the Friendship Cup as a symbol of the friendship of a group of four friends from Salonika High School on Long Island who went off to college, splitting two ways. One pair attending Penn State and the other heading to Rutgers, including the recently passed Tom Hayes, who was a Penn State alumni and then the longtime head coach at Rutgers. Since that trophy was instituted in 1998, Rutgers has raised the Friendship Cup postgame as victors nine times, and they'll be playing for it again on Friday night at 6 o'clock.
Why can't we be friends?
Friends,
Why
why
can't
can't
we
we be
be friends?
friends?
But I guess they can because it's a friendship cup. So, Penn State and Rutgers. Penn State now has righted the ship, two consecutive wins in the Big Ten, knocking off Michigan, and then an impressive win over Hopkins this past weekend. Matt Traynor looks healthy, dropped seven on the Blue Jays. And he seems to be rounding into form just at the right time. Their defense is playing better. Goaltending Jack Frassian is better. They'll face a Rutgers team that I felt like missed a number of opportunities this past weekend to knock off Michigan at home. They went 0 for 5 with the extra man, 28 turnovers. They just put way too much pressure on their defense. Offensively, Rutgers is challenged. So they need to take care of the ball. They cannot turn it over at the clip that they turned it over. They have to take advantage of specialty situations. Even if you score one, two of those goals, it could have been a different game last week in the extra man setting. So this is a gigantic game. I know we're going to talk about it later, but who would have thunk in 2025 the number one seed comes down to Michigan versus Ohio State for the tournament? That's what we get with this one. With the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference. But Penn State Rutgers looking to elevate themselves into at least the three, maybe the four seed for the tournament, meaning they get a home game. They don't have to travel for the quarterfinals. Jack Kaiser, Mitchell Pelkey will have this call on the Big Ten Network Friday night.
And in the nightcap, best rivalry in the sport, Hopkins Blue Jays in College Park against the number three Maryland Terrapins. Hopkins is struggling. They've lost four in a row. They're 0-4 in the Big Ten. All those games they dropped in a row were in the Big Ten against conference foes. Maryland righted the ship last week, 9-2 overall, ranked number three. Got a good win over Ohio State on the road. This game will be at 8 o'clock on the Big Ten Network. What can I say about this? Hopkins leads the all-time series 77 to 50, one tie. They've won the last two regular season meetings, 12-11 in 2023, which ended a five-game losing streak to the Terps, which no one was happy about. And they won last year 7-5. You'll be on the call with Coach Zim. What can we expect?
In the who would have thunk it department, Hopkins, last place, winless so far in the Big Ten. I hope the offense shows up with a little bit more punch, a little bit more urgency. They've got to figure it out. Russell Melendez has been absent with an injury. Not sure of his status. Does he suit up? Does he not? Changes things if he does. I think at the faceoff dot, Hopkins is strong. But Logan Callahan can't do it all himself. And yeah, it's been a little bit of a revolving door at goaltender, but Owen Gelinas seems like he has secured that spot. This is going to take a special effort for Hopkins. They're going to have to pull from the tradition, the pride, the intensity, the support that they get in this rivalry because they're going into Maryland and the Terps. Has there been a harder team to figure out over the last couple of weeks than Maryland? Losing to Michigan, then they beat Penn State in fairly significant fashion. Then they lose for the first time since 1980 to Rutgers, only to go on the road against the hottest team in the country at the time, Ohio State, and they handle the Buckeyes. So this has been an inconsistent month for Maryland, but you better believe that they're going to show up. And they're going to be ready to play Hopkins, and they're going to be on upset alert. They do not want to lose to the Blue Jays. regardless of the outcome, Hopkins will be the number six seed in the tournament, so they will go on the road. But boy, wouldn't it be a momentum changer, maybe a season changer, if Hopkins can go into College Park and get this win.
Yeah, we talked about these rivals. Last week, we talked about the Navy Army one. That's how, although Army's having a great season, and we've sort of forgotten about Navy a little bit. And you throw the records out, but we're talking about how close those two teams actually were, and the game, the way it played out on the field last Saturday, was certainly like a perfect example of how close those two teams are. This one, you look at the records. And you're like, wow, Maryland, they're 4.5 goal favorites. That feels about right. They're playing at home. But this is a case where it does not matter. It does not matter what the records are in this rivalry. I expect it to be close, expect it to be hard fought. And it's must watch TV each year.
It's also for playoff jockeying. If you're Maryland, you're looking at they're ranked second right now in the current RPI. Penn State, we're talking about Penn State Rutgers, they're at number three. Johns Hopkins, they're down the list, number 17 in RPI, which isn't the end of the world. They get a win here, their metrics look a lot better, in addition to getting a much needed win. Look, it is hard to lose when you haven't tasted victory in over a month. That's a long time when you consider how much time and effort these players and coaches put in. So, boy, this is one that's really, really needed by the Blue Jays.
Absolutely. Saturday, an incredible slate of games. And it starts at noon with a great Ivy League matchup where a top 10 teams, number one ranked Cornell, are 10-1 overall, 4-0 in the Ivy League, will travel to Cambridge to take on the number 10 ranked Harvard Crimson, who are 9-2 overall, 3-1 in the Ivy. This game is at noon. You catch it on ESPN Plus. Before we talk about the game, though, let's bring in our guest this week, Cornell's Ryan Goldstein. Please welcome into the show Cornell star sophomore attackman, Ryan Goldstein. Ryan, thanks for joining us on the DeFi and Dixie podcast.
Thank you. Excited.
Ryan, great to talk with you. Thanks for taking time out of your day as you and the Big Red prepare for a huge Ivy League game this weekend against the Harvard Crimson. My first question, and it's a little bit of a windy day here in Maryland, a little bit of a cold spell on the East Coast. What's the weather like in Ithaca?
It's always sunny in Ithaca. No, I'm kidding. We got some snow up here today. Been pretty cold week, but we've had a decent, it's been up and down spring. Some nice days, some pretty crappy days, but today's snowing again, middle of April, snow in Ithaca. I guess I'd call that normal here.
For sure. How do you guys deal with snow? It's probably pretty regular. Like, we get snow in this part, even further south, that could force teams to go inside or under a bubble maybe, which is are great resources to have. But how do you get, guys deal with it up in Ithaca?
So we don't have an indoor facility. There's actually one under the in the works right now, but every day we've been outside. I remember earlier this year, like even past the Denver game, we hadn't even been like full. We were full sweatpants, full sweatshirt for practice every single day until like 5 to 6, maybe even farther into the season. So yeah, definitely pretty cold up here. But it doesn't really stop us. We're used to that. Like say, like it's our weather. Something that like last week in Long Island, 40 degrees and rain. We were fired up for that. We know Syracuse likes to go in the dome, but we don't have that up here. It's funny because like all our friends from back home and the guys you play with and club all growing up, they're like, oh, like you guys have a dome there, right? And we kind of like tell them no, and they kind of like think we're crazy up here. But yeah, we love that. That's like one of the big parts of our team. Getting outside and getting after with the guys, regardless of the weather. Some of the cold days or even some of the better days. But yeah, we love it up here.
Awesome. Well, it's worked for you guys so far in 2025. Number one ranked team in the country, according to the Kane Inside Lacrosse media poll. Your parents, and everybody knows Tim Goldstein, but your mom, Tina, the former Tina Hennessy, was also a stud lacrosse player at Cornell. What was your recruiting process like, and what was it like growing up Goldstein in a family of Big Red?
So yeah, my whole life coming to games, definitely heard about all the time. So I was really young. Favorite team was always Cornell. This place I always dreamed of going to. So our recruiting process was always the dream to go here, and that was kind of the only place I ever had my mind on. So that was definitely September 1. That was the only place I really had my mind on. Only place I've really ever been besides North Carolina, because my uncle went there. Those are the only two places that I've really heard too much about or cared as much to even go to. But yeah, Cornell is always a place I always dreamed of, and it's been everything I've ever dreamed of and more. So I was definitely really fired up when I got that couple months in the process when I got the official offer and it was all set to come here. So yeah, it's been a dream come true.
Another near miss for the Tar Heels. We had Billy Dwan from Syracuse on a couple weeks ago, and Carolina was one of his finalists. And now, obviously, I know your uncle Dennis, my son Owen, is currently at North Carolina. Another future Tar Heel we let get away, but you're doing great things up at Cornell for sure. You one of the first things that people notice about you is your stature. You're a relatively smaller player in the scheme of things when it comes to men's Division I college lacrosse. How have you approached the game as a smaller player, and how have you made it work to your benefit?
So yeah, I guess it brings back a little bit. Middle school is always the same way. I guess growing up my whole life in the same way, but middle school is when lacrosse starts to kind of ramp up a little bit and being undersized. Obviously, like we talked about before, like Cornell lacrosse my whole thing. So when I was growing up, I was always watching those players, and a player like Rob Pinnell would always give my dad advice because he was in the same situation, and he said that like you just got to control the controllables, and for me that meant I was going to try to have the best six skills possible. And that was I went to the wall like every day before middle school, and that was the way I separated myself because I always had good vision and I allowed my vision stick skills to keep up for it and allow me to progress as a player. And I would say growing up when you're smaller and when you get to the high school level and you're in club ball and you're playing some of those elite club teams, playing against the best, definitely was not having my way and I was struggling. I wasn't even starting sometimes in club ball sophomore year of high school. And so I learned, but the thing for that is I learned how to play off ball. I learned to play different roles that have helped me a lot in my game and still help me to this day. And I'm pretty comfortable in all spots on the field. And some of that also that helped me with that was TJ Malone too, because he was smaller growing up. So he would always talk about how he developed his game and had many different parts to it. And that's something that I take really seriously is trying to grow my game and always trying to add different parts of my game because I've been in different roles. But yeah, but now that still gotten a little stronger, still trying to work on that to this day. But definitely been something that I've gotten better at over my career and definitely playing a lot of different roles have helped me.
D-Fly is always trying to get stronger too. So the chase never stops. It never stops.
Never.
Gotta hit the wall. So you mentioned a couple of guys, TJ Malone, Rob Pinnell, obviously your uncle and your dad are great players. Are there certain attackmen that you've patterned your game after, or besides those two?
Yeah, I'm always trying to pattern my game after different people, but I would say the biggest is probably Mikey Sowers. Definitely trying to add pieces from different people like Rob Pinnell. I would say there's a lot of Philly guys that I always grew up watching, and there was like going to like the big time Haverford Malvern games. Actually, a big game yesterday I saw that went to overtime. But like games like that that I was always going to growing up, just like watching those players, just like emulating them, going back in the backyard after that game and just trying different stuff that they were trying. And that was where my love for the game grew and even started. But I would say there's a lot of people, and to this day I'm always still adding people, always watching highlight tapes, whether that's like Chris Gray. I've mentioned a lot of different people, but Kevin Rice is a big one. Mikey Powell, the way he moves, and even it doesn't have to be people that are playing nowadays. And it can even be different players, like how Xander Dickson moves inside, like players like that, and how players that might be different statures. I mean, we've already talked about that a little bit. I can just add stuff that they're doing in their game, and I might not be able to do it to the best of my ability, but I'm going to try and see how this looks, and then give it a try.
True student of the game, Dix.
Absolutely. So you mentioned your time in Pennsylvania as a middle schooler, as a high school player, and you just mentioned Haverford and Malvern Prep, two teams that are elite when you consider not only the Pennsylvania landscape but the national landscape. You played at Radnor, which is a public school, and in the sport of lacrosse, maybe more than any other sport, the public private Catholic conversation comes into play. How did you end up at Radnor, not a place like Malvern, Haverford, LaSalle, some place like that?
So Radnor Township actually flows into a lot of these because it's pretty close. A lot of the Radnor Township kids will play and go to Haverford and Malvern, not as much Malvern, but Haverford. So I was always growing up with these players and kind of a couple of dads that really helped out a lot. Give a shout out to those guys, Damian Armando, Bill Gallagher, whose son plays at Notre Dame right now. And a couple of dads that always help out. And my dad was one of the coaches that always help out. And we kind of had a great youth program and kind of grew that up. And you'll see nowadays that Radnor, I think, has won four state championships in a row, going for five this year. My brother's on that team right now. But that was when we got there, that was kind of that first year. And you see that from all those U teams that we had. But for me, it was never going to be going to private school. Radnor was always the spot I wanted to be at, coached by a legendary head coach, Coach Beasier, John Beasier's name. And then actually the Haverford offensive coordinator, when they had those great teams with like Grant Amend, Drew Sapinski, Docs Aiken, was Mark Patron. And going into my freshman year, they had a change of coaching staff when John Ostrant and like their entire coaching staff kind of got the boot. He ended up coming to Radnor, and that's kind of when we took off. He's a guy, Coach Patron, have to give him a shout out. He's a guy that's there every single day in winter, every single day in the fall. He's the biggest lax rat there is. And he's made those players, like you'll hear TJ Malone talk about it a lot. He'll give him shout outs all the time. Grant Amend is what Coach Patron does. And for me, staying home, going to Radnor was the best decision I made. And there kind of wasn't a decision. There's never a thought to me going to private school. And I would say that definitely helped my game out a lot, because if I went to private school, those kids are a lot bigger. And I would have probably not got the chance to play until super late, just the way my stature was. I was like freshman year, I was 89 pounds in the spring. And like sophomore year, I probably only got up to like 110. So like I never even got a chance to get a chance to play at those schools with that stature. So I was happy for it. And we have a great coaching staff there that helped me out a lot, and still to this day. Talking to them, my Coach Beasier actually went to my game last week in Long Island because his son was playing on Long Island too. So yeah, it's a great spot there. They're killing it right now. There definitely was not a decision for me.
That's a great story. That's really, really cool. And I've actually reffed a game at Radnor High School. It was a college game, Canisius versus Furman. That's how long ago that was. Furman still had a program out at the Radnor campus. So that's a terrific story.
Hey Ryan, I want to ask you about your trip to Long Island you just referenced. You guys beat Syracuse last week, 17-12. You had 3 goals and 4 assists. Last year, you guys played Notre Dame on Long Island, and you had 3 goals and 3 assists. What is it about playing on the island in particular that gets you fired up and you play your best?
I don't know. I don't know somebody on the island. Maybe the teams were playing Notre Dame, obviously, last year. Syracuse this year. Those are some big time games. I think last year we played Notre Dame, they were one. Syracuse was top five this year, maybe even top three. We played them. I'm not too sure, but those are just huge games. And those are the games kind of growing up that you live for. Those are the games we talked about earlier that like you kind of got to pinch yourself that you're in, because like you were that kid when you see those kids in the sideline, like cheering your name, trying to get like a signed ball. Like that was me growing up at a Cornell lacrosse game. So like those are the games that you live for, like close fourth quarter game against Syracuse, Notre Dame down the wire. Definitely want to have that one back at the end last year against Notre Dame. But this year, we're focused on this year, obviously. But Syracuse is a great atmosphere there. They got a lot of Long Island sure alumni that were there, and got a lot of Long Island ties to their recruiting. We do too. Our assistant coach, Coach Stevens, obviously from there. My dad's from Long Island, so a bunch of his friends were there, and it was a great time. Great to get that win. It was definitely rainy and cold, but that's how we like it, as I said before. And it was a great atmosphere, great tailgate. Looked like they had a blast. A lot of our young alumni were there that graduated last year or a couple years ago, and it was rowdy. You could see that they were fired up for that one. It's a lot closer to come to Ithaca, but it was great to have them there, and that was just a great atmosphere.
You certainly have a terrific team in 2025. The player that really jumps off the page to everybody is CJ Kirst. And we had the pleasure of talking with him last year in this space. What is it like to play with CJ?
I mean, he's great. As much as guys like talk about and like how great he's a player, but he's an even better teammate. He's a great guy, someone you can always talk to. But like on the field, he's someone you look at every day, how he goes about his business. And off the field, like whether that's a lift or everything, it's the same mentality. He's shooting after practice every day, probably always one of the last guys off the field, if not the last one. And you see like it just pays off. He's been that way, I'm sure, since freshman year. I wasn't here obviously, but been that same way. And it's just great to see it, all the hard work he's done paid off. But we're not done yet. We're fired up for the rest of the season. He's got more to go. Obviously, he's got a chance to beat the goal record this year. But we're focused on the Harvard Crimson, take care of it this weekend, and then making that stretch run. I mean, he's been the national championship game. He's lost the first round, and he's obviously didn't even make it last year. So he's fired up. All he wants to do is win. He's ultra competitive. So it's great to play with him because I'm the same way.
You and CJ and Michael Long and the rest of your offense, you're averaging 16 goals a game. You get a lot of the storylines. But on the defensive end, who are some of the standouts that deserve some recognition for our listeners?
Yeah, I would say everyone on defense deserves some credit. Last year, they definitely took a lot of heat. I think that starts from Coach Stevens. I'm sure he'll take some heat for that too. But he's a coach that's always there. He's always watching film with his players. And it kind of starts from our players. They're always watching film with him, trying to get better. And he's a guy that's in film every day with them, asking what he's seeing, and they're getting better. I think everyone on that close defense, that's Matt Dooley, Jason Singer, and Brendan Staub get a lot of credit. We got three LSMs that are great, Walker Wallace, Eddie Rahill, and Walker Schwartz. And it's our D middies. We're great to have Chris Davis back. He's a guy that's had two back surgeries the last year, and you see him out there, and it's great to have him back. D middie room's been great. Definitely pains me to see one of our D middies got towards ACL early in the season. I think we had a great season, Jimmy Troy. But guys are stepping up, whether it's different roles. Anthony Bartolotto stepping up, TJ Lamb stepping up, and you never know when you're gonna get your chance. Never know when someone's gonna get down. That's kind of what that defense has. And not only that defense, I got to give a shout out to our scout defense because they do a great job preparing us, giving us those great looks that, and without them, we're not the team we are. So I got to give those guys a credit too. But defense taking big steps, and can't forget about Wyatt Nostengoal. Goal. He's had a great year. Definitely battled some up and down last year, but he's playing great this year, and we're going to need him down the stretch, and he's definitely ready for it.
We referenced it. You got a big game this week, top 10 matchup with an Ivy League rival, Harvard. What does Cornell need to do to get a victory on Saturday afternoon?
It's gotta be us. We know what that looks like. It starts from a great today practice. Great, we had a great Tuesday practice yesterday. We got after a little bit. Great Monday, but week's not over yet. We gotta take care of business today, tomorrow, and Friday, and then they'll take care of business on Saturday. Show up with the right mindset. Play our game, especially on offense. If we're spinning that rock, I don't think anyone can stop us. So we've got to keep doing what we're doing. Keep it up, and that goes from everyone. Boys are fired up. It's a huge game. It's gonna be up in Harvard. Definitely gonna be a big crowd. Some nice weather, a lot nicer in Ithaca today, but we don't really care about that. We're playing anything, but yeah, it's gonna be great. Definitely fired up, but starts with a great Wednesday practice today.
All right, ready for some quick hitting questions? All right, you're from Philadelphia. What's your all-time favorite sports team?
All-time favorite sports team. I'm definitely a NFL guy. I would say my mom's dad played for the Patriots, so definitely Patriots have been great. Eagles have been great this year, but favorite sports team. Are we talking college or pro?
Up to you. It could be anything. Could be the Cornell volleyball team. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say favorite sports team right now probably be the Eagles or Eagles right now. Definitely fired
Not
up. That was a great season.
the Sixers. I'm a Philly
No, they're
sports fan, by the
horrible.
way.
They're
They're
horrible.
terrible. So
And
disappointing.
honestly, the Phillies might be my favorite right now. They've been great to watch. Those last couple of postseason runs have been great. Obviously, never really get to go that because been away in school. But some of those playoff games look sick to go to.
All right, your family's in town for a game. Where is the best food in Ithaca? Where do you go to eat after a game?
So after a game, we always have a big group. Always, my dad always has a couple people here. Where's my brother up here? My sister up here. I'd say we go to Thompson and Bleecker is a great spot up here, or Criolla is a great spot that we go to here.
Okay. What is your favorite Cornell team to go watch play?
I definitely like to watch the hockey team play a lot. They're great. And I would say soccer, another team. I had a couple buddies on that I lived across with last year that I like to watch those guys' game.
What is the best Cornell lacrosse tradition?
I'd say the hard hat is our best tradition. You see that every day, how we go about our business, that George Berardi. And just kind of like honoring our red line, like that's Ian McEnany too. But I'd say the hard hat's probably our best tradition.
Where's the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia?
My favorite spot's a Great American Pub in Wayne, but I feel like a lot of people would say the is DeLisandro's, but mine's Great American Pub.
Okay. That's the local flavor we're looking for. That's a great answer. Why do we wear number 30? Is there any significance to that number?
There's no significance to that number. I actually always wore 15 my whole life. My dad wore that, but and then sophomore year of high school, like how it goes, you're like the third pick, like seniors get it, then juniors, and then 32 is open. And so I wore that the rest of high school, just change it up a little bit. And then when we got to college, there was not many options. I think the first number was like 16, then it was like 30, and then the next number after that was like 36. So we didn't have really, there's definitely some slim pickings for that. So I picked 30, but what Matt Diamond wore that. So that's a lot of people think I wear that because of him, but he's a great player. But I just wore it because that was like the only options that was there.
All right, the guys are getting together. Who's the best chef on the Cornell lacrosse team?
Getting together, we're chefing. I don't know if we're. Oh yes, Mikey Long. Easy answer, but yeah, he cooks a great steak. But yeah, that's definitely the answer.
Okay. Well, when you guys hit the road for like a trip, like going out to Cambridge this week, where's your favorite restaurant to eat a team meal on the road?
So we actually eat at the hotels every time, whenever they got there. But I know a couple years ago, Cornell used to have some like road trips. They would go to some guys' houses, like Joe Lizzio's house when they would play Yale up in New Canaan. But I don't think we do that too much anymore. But yeah, we go to the hotels and eat whatever they got.
All right. There's a lot of teams that do that. That's a good answer. Final question. All right. If Dixie and I walk into the big red locker room like before practice, two-part question. Who's running the aux and what kind of music would we be most likely to hear?
I would say right now, Jackson Smart's running the aux or Antonio Tapuzzi. If Antonio Tapuzzi's on aux, he's definitely playing some little Uzi. That definitely gets the boys fired up because he's might be Uzi's favorite fan. And then Jackson Smart's on aux. I mean, someone might be trying to take him off aux because some people might not be the biggest fan of his, but he's playing a wide wrath and people are definitely trying to give him some songs to play because he doesn't like taking the heat. So if someone gives him requests, they're going down with him too. But yeah, that's definitely how we do it. And then if Bowie Horseman's on aux, definitely some like rock or some like crazy songs. And then another guy that goes on aux is Jason Singer, who's at defenseman for us. And he's playing some like hard rap that only he listens to.
That's a great answer. I really appreciate it. Hey, Ryan, thanks for joining us on the Defy and Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you in the Big Red throughout the rest of the season.
Great. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the Defy and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Ryan appears to be a real student of the game. I loved his answers. He's very candid. I think the answer I liked the best was obviously he was talking about how he came out of number 30 jersey. You
Yeah.
know, sometimes it's like, oh, well, that's the number my dad wore, or so and so, and he had a real story of how he got there, which is funny. And then I loved his answer to the question about who's on the music,
Yeah.
and just listed some of his boys and one, I forget who it was, but if he's on it, we're gonna have to pull it out of his hands. That's basically what he was saying, so that we can change the
Yeah.
music. I love it. It's good stuff.
Well, it'll be, and I didn't ask him because it slipped my mind, but I was thinking about it. Number 15 is currently worn by CJ Kearst.
I know.
Will he take 15 when Kearst graduates?
It crossed my
Probably
mind.
not.
They might retire that number. Who knows?
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot of greats have certainly worn that number.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this game. Cornell has won five of the last six in this series between Harvard and Cornell. And two-thirds. They've just these teams, obviously a long time Ivy League rivals, played almost 100 games. Cornell's won 67 of them. I would expect a high scoring game. Cornell comes in averaging 16 goals a game, Harvard 15 goals a game. What do you think about this one?
I think it's going to be a terrific game. And the thing with the Ivy League is the field is set. So seven teams in the conference, top four make it. And with Yale beating Dartmouth last week, I believe that clinched the fourth and final spot as it stands right now. for the Bulldogs. So you have Cornell, Harvard, Princeton, Yale. Now it's all a matter of jockeying for position for seeding, because the top seed will host the Ivy League tournament. So, I mean, right off the bat, you've got star power. You know, CJ Kearse for Cornell, Sam King playing for Harvard. Both, you know, Cornell probably a little bit more prolific offensively, but Harvard can score in bunches too. So these are two really strong teams, hot teams. Cornell, 6-game win streak. Harvard's on a 4-game tear. Both are playing with a lot of confidence. Both are playing at a high level, limiting, make other guys beat you. And when you look at the X's and O's, you know, both throw that out. I think this is going to come down to the Jimmies and the Joes. And I know it's cliche, but who other than Sam King or CJ Kearse can make plays for these ball clubs? And I think on paper, and from what we've seen so far, you'd have to say Cornell probably has more playmakers, but that's why they play the game. And maybe give a half goal to Harvard for home field advantage. Ryan Goldstein referenced, he thinks it's going to be a big crowd. So this should be a fun one and a really good atmosphere with a lot on the line between Cornell and Harvard.
Next game up, number 9 Notre Dame visits Chapel Hill to face the number 5 ranked Tar Heels at noon on ESPNU. Notre Dame is 6-3 overall, 2-1 in the ACC. North Carolina comes into the game 9-2 overall, 2-0 in the ACC. Casey, you and I are both going to attend this game. This is going to be fun. It's going to be 86 degrees and sunny in Chapel Hill on Saturday at noon when these teams face off.
So you'll be wearing your wife beater and your jorts.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I want to look like every other Tar Heel on campus.
And your, oh, every other Tar Heel. I just got that. Yeah, that's great. You're so salty. So, such a salty Duke fan. Are you going to wear your hat backwards, like sitting on top of your head? What is that look, by the way, these days? Have you seen it? I see it a lot at my gym. So when I wear hats, I'm an old guy now. I wear them typically to keep sun off of my bald head and the sun out of my eyes. But I did used to wear my hat backwards back in the day. But I think once you turn like, I don't know, 23, 24, 25, you don't wear a hat backwards anymore. I'm seeing grown men wearing their hat backwards. Not only do they wear it backwards, but they like sit it on top of their head versus putting it down on their head. Do you know, you understand what I'm saying?
I don't think I've seen this, but I haven't. I will start paying attention to it. I feel like this is going to be one of those things. And now that you have made me aware of it, everywhere I go, I'm going to see this and it's going to annoy me so much. And I'll think of you every time I see it. But I'll be on
Gonna
the
want to
lookout
run
for it
over and
this.
smack the hat off their head.
I'll be on the lookout for it this weekend when I'm walking around.
These are the same adult men that tuck their sweatpants or their joggers into their socks. I don't know if you've seen that look.
I have. That's fine if like you're riding a bike and you're worried about getting caught in a chain or something.
Right.
But when you get off the bike, you undo that, right? Yeah, that's a bad look.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about North Carolina and Notre Dame lacrosse. Should have mentioned Cornell number 4 current RPI, Harvard number 7. So really good place for the metrics. Notre Dame currently 9th in RPI. North Carolina is at 5. The thing is, though, with Notre Dame, 3 losses. Does a fourth really hurt them in terms of if they don't win the ACC? And I know there's not an automatic qualifier, but sitting at 6-3, if they go to 6-4, does that really hamper them? I'm not so sure, you know. So this is a big game for both teams. Carolina's 2-0 in the conference. Syracuse 2-0. Notre Dame 2-1. Duke and Virginia currently winless. So this is not only for Notre Dame to increase their metrics, as well as Carolina for that matter. This is for positioning. You know, who's seeding for the ACC tournament in Charlotte, where the top 4 make it. Young talent all over the field. A matchup that many people are anticipating. Notre Dame defender Sean Light taking on North Carolina attackman Owen Duffy. You've got the goaltending advantage. I think Mike G for the Tar Heels, the experience might be a little bit more than Richard Dely. But I think a player that can really be an X factor in this game is Jake Taylor for Notre Dame. How does Carolina defend him? They're going to have somebody be really very much disciplined on the inside, not to let him get his hands free and see any glimmer of light. And I think you really have to give a ton of credit to North Carolina defensive coordinator Dave Petromalla, the job he's done with that group this year in 2025, losing Peter Thoman, their top cover guy, and the Carolina defense continues to play at a really high level. This is going to be a fun game. You mentioned the weather, beautiful day. Bring some D-Fly and Dixie podcast hats. We've had a couple of requests from down on Tobacco Road. Gotta try to keep our fans happy. And I'm hoping to meet Coach Belichick and invite him on the podcast.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great if we can get Coach Belichick to join us. I'm thinking around NCAA tournament time
That would be
to
cool.
just kind of handicap the NCAAs for us.
I would be a bad uncle if I did not say that Mike G was the ACC Player of the Week for defense and U.S. Lacrosse Defensive Player of the Week after his 12-goal performance against arch rival Duke
I
last
mean,
week.
12 save performance.
What did I say?
You said 12 goal performance.
Yeah, I meant 12 saves.
I
12
know. You
save
better have
performance
bet 12
against
saves, 12
arch
goals.
rival, dude. Yeah. Yeah, 12
Mason
saves.
Souchek also got ACC Offensive
Did.
Player of the Week, the freshman for North
Yeah, he was
Carolina.
great. Yeah, the young guys for Carolina have really played well. Really played well. That game is again at noon on ESPNU.
Yeah, the Tar Heels and the Irish square off. Anish Shroff and Park Hark-Ottara will have the call from Chapel Hill.
All right, Dixie. I'm really excited about this next game. Number 19 UMass is at number 11 Richmond, a top 20 matchup and a big game in the A10. The winner is Richmond's 3-0 in the A10, 9-3 overall. UMass comes in 2-1 in the A10, and they're 9-3 also. At the same time, High Point and St. Joe's will also square off against each other on Saturday, and they're both 2-1 in the A10. So the winner of that game will be 3-1. Obviously, if UMass wins this Richmond game, there'll be three teams tied at 3-1, Richmond, UMass, and the High Point St. Joe's winner. Richmond can separate themselves a little bit, stay undefeated with the win on Saturday. They've only played once all time. This is only the second game in the series because of the relevant newness of not only Richmond's program, but certainly A10 lacrosse. On the men's side, and the Spiders won 14-12 last year in Amherst. I love late in the season when there's these pivotal games and these conferences that we get to talk about.
I'm with you 100%. I am scratching my head as to how UMass got back in the Kane inside the lacrosse media poll after losing to High Point the week before. I put Yale and Villanova in my top 20, and they got receiving votes. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and that's all that the poll is. It's opinion. But when you look at, Yale's won four in a row, and they knocked off Hofstra in a midweek game earlier this week. Villanova's putting together, I mean, arguably that people say they might have the inside track in the Big East to win the Big East. But UMass has still really put together a solid season. I think the win over St. Joe's is a lot of money in their bank. And the win against Rutgers has more cachet to it since the Scarlet Knights knocked off Maryland. But are they a top 20 team? I'm not so sure. They certainly get to prove it this weekend against a Richmond team that's having a brilliant season. The Spiders, do they have enough juice to make an at-large if they don't win the Atlantic 10 championship? I'm not so sure, but they do have an RPI currently of 12, which isn't the best, but it's not, I mean, it's in the orbit, right? It's in the conversation. And you look at their body of work, wins over Georgetown, wins over Virginia. But any other year, that might be a difference maker. But the Hoyas and the Cavaliers are both a little bit down. So this is just a really intriguing game, a very, very intriguing game. Going to go a long way, obviously, towards seeding in the Atlantic 10 tournament, but it really does look like it's a four-team race out of that 16 conference. And you got to give a lot of credit to High Point and John Crawley, the job that he is doing, the Hopkins graduate, the former Hopkins assistant, former Lehigh assistant, in his first year. We're seeing vast improvement out of the Panthers, right? High Point Panthers.
Yeah, High Point Panthers.
Yeah, out of the Panthers.
All right, so this is a UMass game. You can see again, it's at noon on ESPN Plus. All right, moving on. At 2 o'clock on the ACC Network, number 7 Syracuse will be on Tobacco Road. They're 9-3, 2-0 in the ACC. They'll take on number 12 ranked Duke, who's 9-4 and 0-2 in the ACC. These teams have battled back, exchanging games in this series recently. Last year, Duke got a 18-13 win in Charlotte, but lost in the Dome 10-4. Really stymied on a Wednesday night back in March. This should be a great game, Dix.
Should be. Chris Cotter, Quinn Kessenick will have the call for you on the ACC network. Duke and Syracuse both coming off tough losses where Duke's offense seemed to sputter a little bit against North Carolina. And then Syracuse just couldn't contain Cornell up on Long Island as the Big Red took a tough win. But you mentioned it, Duke 0-2 in the ACC. It looks like it's going to come down to Duke, Virginia for that fourth and final spot in the ACC tournament. They still haven't played one another, and that game is on tap, not this weekend, but the following weekend. But it would really warm the hearts of Blue Devil fans if they could knock off Syracuse. How will they compete at the faceoff dot? And how will Duke be able to defend the high-powered offense of the Orange, which, when you look at how each team plays, and you can say this about Syracuse and everybody else, Syracuse just plays differently. They play at such a higher tempo. They emulate their head coach, Gary Gate. They're allowed to take risks. They're allowed to take chances. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to throw the ball all over the field. Duke, I was impressed with their physicality last weekend against North Carolina on the defensive end. It was borderline over aggressive. I thought there were a couple things that could have been called but weren't. And so you take what the referees allow you. So I think this game will be very physical. And it's a must win for the Duke Blue Devils to kind of right their ship and get things back on track. Syracuse right now with an 8 RPI, Duke at 10. I mean, here's a question for you. Duke drops this game and then doesn't make the ACC tournament, they're Dunsky, right? Like they're not going to make the NCAAs, you think?
What's their RPI?
10.
So the advantage of the ACC tournament is the opportunities for quality wins. And if you're not at the table for that,
Missed
it's not good.
opportunity.
It's big time missed opportunities. And who are their best wins over?
Best wins were over Michigan and Richmond.
Good. It depends
They're
what
good.
happens, this
Yep.
weekend, how those teams do. They're solid wins. They're not exceptional. Yeah, they Duke needs this game. They really
The
do.
BU win could also come into fruition, depending upon how the Terriers finish up. But
Again, another quality win.
notwithstanding that BU win, the Blue Devils have dropped three out of the last four.
They need this. The big rivalry and one of the biggest games of the weekend, Ohio State, Michigan, for the Big Ten regular season championship and top seed in the tournament. Number 6, Ohio State. 11-2 overall, 3-1 in the Big Ten. Travel to Ann Arbor to take on number 13 ranked Michigan, who's 7-5 overall, 3-1 in the Big Ten. This is at 4 o'clock. You catch this on the Big Ten Network. This game has been a catalyst for the Wolverines the past 2 years as Michigan used the regular season rivalry game and a victory over Ohio State to springboard into the postseason where they beat Ohio State for a second time each of those years in the first round of the Big Ten tournament on their way to a Big Ten championship and the automatic qualifier from the Big Ten to get into the NCAA tournament. Can they do it again, or will the Buckeyes continue their great season and knock off the Wolverines in Ann Arbor?
Michigan has won the last four against Ohio State. That doesn't sit well with the Buckeyes. To add salt into that wound, Ohio State had to watch Michigan celebrate a Big Ten championship on their turf. So you better believe that Ohio State is going to be ready for this game. Michigan will be ready as well. But I found through my years of broadcasting, the Ohio State folks tend to take this rivalry a little bit more serious. And what do I mean by that? Ohio State folks refer to Michigan as TTUN, that team up north. Michigan never changes the way they talk about Ohio State. Football in particular, but I bet they're doing it around the lacrosse facility as well. They put X's over M's that are in any of the street signs or any other signage that has the letter M. I don't think Michigan does that with O's or S's around Ann Arbor. But that notwithstanding, again, winner gets the number one overall seed in the Big Ten tournament. The destination has already been established. It is in Ann Arbor. It is at Michigan. It would be great if Michigan could be the number one seed, and the swell of support I've seen over the years grow for this Wolverine program. It is typically standing room only at their home lacrosse games. Same thing for Ohio State. We saw it last weekend in their huge game against Maryland. When you look at this one, two of the better goaltenders in the Big Ten, with Hunter Taylor for Michigan, Kalyn Fiok, Big Tasty for Ohio State. Taylor stepped up, as did the Buckeye, as did the Wolverine offense. Forgive me, please. As did the Wolverine offense, Ryan Cohen in particular. Bo Lockwood was huge in their win against Rutgers a week ago. Ohio State looking to get one back. You know, their defense, they had won 11 games in a row. Their defense, arguably the best in the country, was handled by Maryland last weekend, 13 tallies by the Terrapins. So this game's going to have everything. Again, Jack Kaiser, Mitchell Pelkey on the call. There's games that you don't get that you wish you were doing, and I kind of selfishly, I wish I was doing this game, but that would mean I wouldn't be able to go down to Chapel Hill and see Owen and his Tar Heels take on Notre Dame. So I'm good with it, but I'm really envious of Jack and Mitchell to being able to call this thing.
Yeah, this is gonna be a great one. 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, Big Ten Network. Don't miss it. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. I want to talk about the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Playoffs.
You want to talk about the playoffs?
We saw a great playoff in the Masters where they do it. I want to talk about the format because the NBA is getting underway, and I had to like review last night like exactly how the NBA playoffs work, and I want to get your thought on it. In golf, at least the Masters, you just go back and play the 18th hole again, and it's winner take all, whoever has the lowest score on that hole. If they tie, I think they just do it again. In the NBA, they changed up the format to make it a little more engaging. And they take basically in each of the Western and Eastern conferences, the top six teams, whatever your record is, you're in the playoffs. Then the 7 and 8 teams, again, you could be tied, but like the 7 team gets to host the 8 team. And they had this on Tuesday night of this week. Whoever wins that becomes the 7 seed. It's a one game. The 8 seed is not eliminated. They get to whoever loses that game gets to host on Friday the 9-10 winner. So then on Wednesday night, the 9-10 teams play at the number 9 team's venue, and the loser's eliminated. And then the winner of the 9-10 game then has to go to the loser of the 7-8 game for the last spot in the playoffs. That's pretty compelling. Pretty compelling. And then you start like whoever wins on Friday night, that's the 8th seed. You go to the number 1 seed and play, I think, on Sunday. I think the playoffs get started with all the other teams on Sunday. I like that format. It works for me, of a way of making more teams in the playoffs, but not as much tanking, although there was plenty this year. But it makes the regular season a little more compelling, and obviously the beginning of the playoffs a little more compelling. What are your thoughts?
You just made my head hurt with all the explanation of what's going on. in the NBA. I think it's, you say it's more teams. I say it's more money, more TV.
Sure.
Well, let's not forget the ratings are down like 60% for the NBA. And you just watch a game and look, I think they're great athletes. I think they're great players. But we talked about it last week, what goes on and what goes into Alex Ovechkin's all-time goal record versus LeBron's all-time points record. Now, I mean, it's like, it's crazy. It's almost like you feel like it's fixed because you'll be watching a game or following a score. And let's say Memphis will be trailing Golden State by 25 points and midway through the second quarter. Then you turn it on at the end of the third quarter, and it's like a 3-point game. How do teams screw up that bad to like
Yeah.
cough up a 25-point lead? But whatever, regardless, I've watched more NBA this year than I have in years past. And I think that the size of those guys and the athleticism and that court is so much smaller in person than what it looks like on television. But I mean, it's a long season, man. It's a grind. Now you got to play these guys again. And I mean, really, we got what? We got 2 months left of NBA.
Yeah, they wrap up in like
So,
sometime in June.
I think altogether there's only 10 teams that don't make the playoffs. And
Yeah, I
like,
mean, there's
you
still a
look at the
lot.
Wizards, you look at the Jazz, like those two teams stink.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't really have an opinion on it. Well, I guess I just gave an opinion,
You
but
did.
yeah.
All right, well, that seems like a good place to
I
stop.
mean, I don't know what to tell you. What are you like? What exactly are you excited about
The playoffs? No, I just like that
for the
it.
NBA?
Again, I'm not a big consumer of it, but I am a consumer of sports and the sports business. So I get the angles that you're talking about. But I like when they're willing to tinker with something.
I see what you're saying.
Baseball's done it quite a bit too. Like they've changed their format of the playoffs and with wild cards and more teams making it and who plays
But is
who.
it for the better?
It gives fans more hope that your team has a shot, and that the
Okay.
season can keep going. So I think of it this way. If they just had eight teams, which is what they used to do, it could have been set weeks ago who the eight teams are. And then there's just two more fan bases in the East, or maybe more, who are vying for that 10th spot who just don't care. And then if you add in both conferences, so there's four more teams make the playoffs and have a shot if you get hot or healthy during a certain week, this particular week, you have an extra shot at it. So I appreciate the willingness to make changes. For instance, another way that the NBA is constantly trying to fix their like all-star game, and they're willing to make big changes to how they do it just to make it more compelling, interesting, get fans more engaged, and that's it's something. I mean, the NFL is trying to do it. They used to have a Pro Bowl, which was actually like real football, and it got less and less like real football for a long time, to the point where players just didn't want to play in it for risk of injury. Then they went to a flag football game. It was different on weekend, and now they kind of settled into something that is really built for like young kids who are 6 to 18 years old or something. The format where it's like games and flag football. I just appreciate like a willingness to change and make changes. And as we talk about our own sport, maybe it's time we look at how we do the NCAA championships in men's lacrosse. And maybe they don't have to be, we're talking about it's snowing in Ithaca this week.
Yeah.
When we were talking to Ryan Goldstein, it was snowing. And it's going to be 85 degrees in Chapel Hill. There is going to be a ton of people in Chapel Hill this week at that game, the Notre Dame game, right? And it's just as the weather's getting good and the season's coming up. It's literally the end of the regular season. So maybe they could push it back. If you can do it in college baseball where they have the World Series at a certain location in June, maybe it's time the powers that be in the sport of men's lacrosse look to evolve the sport a little bit.
Well, I think it has evolved. It's called the PLL. Some people like it, some people don't. You're also looking at a sixes format in the Olympics, and sixes is an adjustment that lacrosse has made. I just feel like what you say to give, and I don't disagree with you, to give fan bases something to cheer for versus being done. The almighty dollar rules everything that you just discussed, whether it's television ratings, ticket revenue, merchandise, concessions. It's, baseball in particular too, is it's a lot about money, a lot about money. I do like baseball's format though. I like the wild card, short and sweet. Then you go to the divisional, then you go to the ALCS. I remember when we were growing up, it was four teams made it. The East champ and the West champ in the American League and the National League. They played in the championship series and they met in the World Series. So, is that better? I don't know. It's just the way that it used to be. But now there's more teams playing and more fans, and sports media is more popular than ever. So, got to give the people what they want.
Yeah. And that sometimes just means more defined Dixie.
That's right. That's right.
Seems like a good place to stop.
For now.
For now. Thanks again to our guest this week, Ryan Goldstein. Good luck to him and the Big Red. A reminder that the Defiant Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Please like us on your favorite podcast app and share it with a friend. Share the love, it's free. We'd always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the games.
Bum 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 bum